You're tuned in to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
Afternoon and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive here on Fan Run Radio. Russell Smith punching the time clock at 3:01 on a beautiful Thursday afternoon where we are still drunk off the keg of glory.
Pardon me.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Championship Thursday afternoon on The Drive.
Our beloved Vols winning their 11th SEC championship and their sixth outright last night in Columbia, and we are going to hang on the rim this afternoon. You better believe it, ladies and gentlemen. The second title of the Rick Barnes era. He wants to play on Monday, Houston Kress.
Which is Saturday, according to him.
I don't really understand what that part was about.
So the national championship game is played on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what he's saying is to get there,
you have to play on
a Saturday.
You got to
play Saturday against Kentucky. So yesterday he wanted to play on Monday, which was Wednesday.
Theoretically, we could play on several more Saturdays.
This is true.
But let's not get bogged down in the details.
Well, I was just confused at first. I was like, oh, okay, national championship, yeah. Monday night. It makes sense. I get it.
They had to clue me in last night on voluntary reaction as well. Joe Lunardi has bent the knee. And now all that remains between the Volunteers and the program's first ever one seed in the NCAA tournament is a win Saturday over the Mildcats in Thompson Bowling Assembly Center and Arena, and probably a win a week from tomorrow in Nashville. There's some debate about exactly what we have to do. There's a little bit of a sliding scale thing here. But again, we won't get too far into the weeds on this one. Houston Bear and I have spent 2+ hours last night already breaking this thing down to levels beyond scientific with Davey Hudson on the voluntary reaction. Your thoughts, your reaction to Tennessee going down to South Carolina, grinding it out, and ultimately coming away with the win and the championship.
I'll start here. I was skeptical. That was a pretty awesome environment for college basketball last night.
We knew it would be.
And credit to the Tennessee fans who showed up.
Yes.
Looked like definitely a double-digit percentage of Tennessee fans made the trip. They made their voices heard. But there was some star power in that arena for both sides. And I give South Carolina fans a lot of credit. Every basket they hit, because this was such a close game, you could feel them. They were ready to go. They were ready to
get
on that run. No, they didn't. They didn't stop.
Would not go away.
So I give our team a lot of credit for responding to that, because there were some moments early on, I thought we were falling back into the, oh, we're missing some dunks, we're missing some bunnies, we're missing some open looks. And you said it. They grinded. They battled. They didn't get
rock
down.
Fight.
Never trailed in this game, even though at times it felt like maybe that was inevitable. It wasn't the prettiest game, and I think that's a credit to South Carolina. I leave this game again saying what I said after the first one. This South Carolina team, they're pretty damn good.
They're definitely on one of my – I was thinking about it last night. Like, I could see myself launching them deep into the tournament. I felt like last night, after getting off VR, I kind of rope-a-doped them. They never led. They got close some. We let them punch themselves out, and then we just kept scoring.
Thought Rick Barnes said it best after the game, that – short snippet of video that UT put out on social media. Our defense did it. We made just enough shots. There were some big shots made, and we were clutch at the free throw line down the stretch, but you hold them to 38% from the field, 27.6% from three-point range. They also left some crucial points on the board at the free throw line. They were only 5 of 10 from the stripe, but I thought Tennessee, the defense traveled. And Connect had another big game, and it was enough.
Yeah, it was kind of weird in the game last night. It felt like we either forced or for whatever reason, South Carolina came into that wanting to shoot a lot of threes, and that has not been their game plan all year. I don't know if that was something that we were kind of giving them defensively, but it was strange. That's not their personality.
I kind of felt like they shot themselves out of a chance to win that game in the first half.
Maybe they were just too amped up and everything looked good.
I'll tell you one thing we didn't do good. Like, they could get to the rim.
They showed it late, Granted, you're also in a position where you don't want to foul them, so you're kind of letting them, you know.
Here's Rick Barnes after the game talking about when it began to sink in that he had won his second SEC title.
Honestly, when I was walking back, just for the guys, I mean, I just know how hard these guys have worked and putting up with me every day, and especially Joe and Santi for 5 years, and which hadn't always been good, and I think they had both the other times they probably hated me. But the fact is, there is a special bond with this group of guys. Mary Carter said to me before the game, she said, you know, Coach, this team of guys, they really love each other. And I was thinking about some of those things. But, again, I also thought about, you know, again, Lamont, I've been there too. And, again, I just think he's done a great job. And I looked at his players. I shook their hands. I looked at them. I know how badly they want it, and that's how hard it is to win a regular season championship at any level. But just proud of the way we've been able to go up to this point. We've got one more game, but it was exactly the kind of game we thought it would be. I thought both teams really defended the other one well, and really with about 10 minutes to go, that's why we went with our older guys. We felt like we were going to have to put it on our defense, and other than the fact they were just putting their head down, just driving so hard to the basket, trying to get fouled. We defended them okay. I mean, we were getting hurt on the ball screen, but you got to give Michi credit for that because he's such a hard guy to guard when he gets going to his right.
You could tell that Lamont Parrish and his program really Barnes praises everybody. He does that. That seems genuine, and Lamont Parrish is very impressive what he's done with that roster and the quick turnaround there. And to his credit, I was listening to some of his post-game comments last night as well, and he did not blame the officials or go, you know, like their fans were doing. As a matter of fact, he said he thought that the officiating got in his players' heads a little bit, and that it was, you know, he was like, listen, we can't let that affect us, you know. And that was a very Barnesian take, I thought, from him. But Rick Barnes, obviously, I think there is a mutual respect there between the coaches.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I watched it as well. I talked a little bit less about his comments on Connect. So how long do you think he'll be there?
I don't know. I mean, he's probably, if he continues to have success, and I don't know if he gets any sniffs this time around. I've seen his name connected to the Ohio State gig a little bit. I don't know if he gets that job, but if he continues to have success, then probably very, very early. It's
like
his
maybe
second year.
Two, three more good years.
Hey, Dennis Gates, we were having the same conversations about him last year, and they're going for the perfect season this weekend. So
I think they're going
to
get it.
How quickly you could go from coach of the year to, I don't know if this guy's going to be around much longer.
They were good last
Stackhouse
year.
Stackhouse was also co-coach of the year last year.
So the fortunes change quickly in the Southeastern Conference College basketball. Six straight wins over ranked opponents now for Tennessee. By the way, Arizona currently has zero wins over ranked teams. But
is that right? Wow.
Well, don't get him started.
I read that somewhere. I don't know if it's true. I haven't done my own research. But if you can't trust theinternet.com, who can you trust? So I got to ask you guys, I'll get Tucker and Houston's thoughts on this as well. They cut it to three, though, a minute 15 to go. It's a one-possession game. Be honest now, I'm hooking you all up to the fan-run lie detector. Did you think we were going to blow it?
Potentially.
No, because I'd already seen Shumpert's tweet, because he was like, somehow Ryan Shumpert lives 30 seconds in the future. You never noticed that?
Did they get it to three?
No. They did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got it to three
because
with
a
minute,
they had that,
what, minute 15, right?
Yeah, they had that rebound off the missed free throw.
Yep.
That's where I was concerned because Tennessee.
Yeah, I remember now.
They do miss the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tennessee was getting beat there on the boards late in the game. A lot of unfortunate bounces and, You know, I figured if they missed a free throw at one point, Murray Boyles or Gray would get one for them, and they did there.
Damn, Gray's a specimen.
Well, being able to win in different ways. We've won the shootout. We've won the classic, you know, first team to 71 wins game, and we've grinded a few out here down the stretch and just smothered teams and won it with free throw shooting at the end. So we've pretty much showed you can win games in different ways, and that's what we've been talking about here on this show for a couple of years, is being able to be versatile when it comes to March. We'll see if it carries over this time, as Tennessee will play for a one seed and Kentucky comes to town. I mean, it's interesting, right? We're celebrating. It feels like the season is over. It's weird. It feels like this game Saturday is, I don't want to say an exhibition, but it's almost like it exists in some weird region between the regular season and the SEC tournament.
I'm with you, and I don't know yet if I like that. I wanted to win last night. But I also don't want – I mean, it's Kentucky at home. It's senior day. And that's why going into it, I thought there's no way that that edge and that atmosphere gets taken away if you win an SEC championship, because it is Kentucky. It is at home. But now I just
– and we'll still have an edge.
Your offense could play loose now.
That's true.
We're going to come into this thing. This may be the most – you imagine how tight, how puckered up we'd all be if we dropped that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know? I'll take this alternative regardless of the outcome. Yeah, just so I don't have to wake up in a cold sweat Saturday
Triple
morning
J,
and wait
Santi,
for the game.
Santi, DK, I mean, just have a day, boys. Just enjoy yourselves. It's your last game, a regular season game, last home game. Just have yourselves a day.
I think there will be a party atmosphere Saturday. We'll see what the weather does, because there's a baseball game at 1. So you could potentially – I've the guy I'm going with, he's got some friends who are doing both. So they're going to the baseball game, and they can walk over to –
it's a lot of excitement.
Basketball. It's a lot of excitement. Hopefully we stomp Illinois' face in. But anyway, looking like maybe a little bit of rain over at Lindsey Nelson for Saturday. But I would expect a party atmosphere in the arena. Senior day, you're going to have – the festivities. I mean, tears will be shed, and then you have to turn it on for the game. Obviously, look, I mean, it's going to be rowdy in there. It's filled to the. You've seen the prices for tickets to this one. This is very much going to be. You don't want it to be too much of a coronation. We don't want to be just counting down the seconds. Can we break out the ladder and scissors now?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know Kentucky is going to first of all want to show that, you know, we punked them. Last time we walked up in their kitchen, made a sandwich, like, threw the wrapper on the floor, the whole nine yards.
Full Debo.
Yeah, we big boyed them. So they're competitive. Calipari is going to do his thing that he always does against Tennessee, where you go back to when he was at Memphis and they showed up in the military fatigues and everything. He's going to try and match our level of physicality and aggression. There's probably going to be some hard fouls. Feelings are going to be hurt. There might be a technical. It's going to be ugly, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I mean, that's Tennessee-Kentucky. That's what this series has become. It's a blood feud, and I would expect nothing less on Saturday.
But I am relieved that we aren't having a I just kept thinking how – it was yesterday during the show. That was what was causing all of my anxiety, was I was afraid we were going to drop that one last night. And if we dropped it, it was just going to be a 72-hour nightmare of anxiety.
Can you imagine
knowing we have to
dealing
be
with him for 3 years? We got to go out to Volunteer Auto Group. Can you imagine dealing with him in public tomorrow under a must-win scenario with Kentucky coming to town?
Yeah. Had we lost, I don't know how much better I would have been as a
He's not exactly wired much tighter than me. I don't know if you've noticed. Have you noticed that Chris goes hard on Twitter?
He does, but he also, in person and in studio, he very much keeps it bottled up. He pushes it down, and I guess it comes out a little bit on Twitter.
I can get it out of him.
I mean, you have no top. It's just constant spring of venom and vitriol and anger in all directions.
He fires right back at me, and like also in texting. You've said some really harsh things. You got to admit,
Houston Crest, a little bit of a keyboard warrior. Is that what you're trying to say?
I was waiting for somebody to drop that.
Russ texted. I can't remember. It was maybe a year ago or something. He goes, "I can never tell when you and Houston are serious, when you guys are arguing." You remember that?
Not really.
We were really.
But I've slept since then. Rick Butler has hopefully slept. He was in the arena covering the festivities for Rocky Top Insider from Columbia last night. He will join us on the program when we continue. It is The Drive, Championship Edition. Join us as we hang on the rim and drink from the keg of glory this afternoon. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, streaming live this afternoon, fanrunradio.com, and your free Fan Run app. Variety of ways for you to experience the program this afternoon. Rick Butler of RockyTopInsider.com with us on the program. Hello, Rick. How are you, sir?
Hello, my friends. I'm doing pretty good. I don't know. Hopefully you guys are as well. I got back in town about an hour ago. But thanks to you, Bear, and Davey, me and my coworker Ryan, we had the voluntary reaction to listen to the whole way through.
Wow.
Sure.
There you go. I'll take my royalty check when you get a minute.
Rick and Ryan, big VR fans. Big VR. Now, we went, what did we do, like 2.5 hours last night?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did about 2:30.
Now, I'm intimately familiar with the drive from Knoxville to Columbia. That is not a 2.5 hour drive, even for a lead foot like me. Did you guys wait till fired up until you got on the road and kind of got settled in, and then maybe it ends when you get through the mountains?
Yeah, so you know what we actually do when it's more than like a 3-4 hour drive is we'll try to make a little bit of headroom on the way back. So we drove from Columbia to Clinton, South Carolina yesterday after the game. So it really only made the drive about 3 hours from start to finish. So yeah, we got on the road, settled in a bit, turned on the VR about halfway or about 30 minutes through, and that took us all the way back to James White Parkway.
Oh, so you guys had a little sleep RTI sleepover last night, getting your jammies and have, you know, hot chocolate with marshmallows and that kind of thing?
Yeah, we're watching the highlights of the game.
Very wholesome.
We're sharing our pictures and video. Yeah, the whole nine yards.
How much trouble can Rick and Ryan get into?
it is a wild bunch. Rick, what was it like it there last night, man? We were talking before you came on. I mean, it felt like a championship environment very much. We had a guy on from 107.5 The Game in Columbia yesterday who was saying that it was essentially the biggest home game in South Carolina basketball history.
Yeah, funny enough, I think I might have met that guy in the press conference room. I didn't have that conversation with him, but I was talking to a guy from that radio station. Might have been the same big time environment. The arena wasn't necessarily full. There were some seats open, especially in the upper deck.
What?
But make no bones about it. It was loud in there. It was hype. But a lot of the reason it was loud in there was because Tennessee fans were able to kind of keep the energy when South Carolina fans were down and out throughout the game. Tennessee fans, there were a lot of them there.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me earlier today kind of what was the percentage. I don't know. I'm not good with eyeballing that. But what I can tell you is that the Tennessee fans were positioned well, and they were loud all night. They knew what was on the line, and then especially as that thing started to get there towards the end and they could see that hypothetical trophy in sight, or the banner in sight, if you will, that's when everything really turned up to 11. So a phenomenal atmosphere, a phenomenal game, and Tennessee gets the win.
Yeah, you could really tell. It showed through on TV that, first of all, it was just raucous. The Carolina fans were all gassed up for that one. But as you said, the Tennessee fans, that there were so many times where Carolina made a little run and Connect would hit a big three, or Tennessee would come back with a bucket, and you could tell Tennessee fans showed up. They traveled.
Yeah, they absolutely did, and that was a good bit of the game, right? It was a game of runs. Tennessee would hit a couple shots. South Carolina would hit a couple shots, but the Gamecocks were never really able to cross that threshold. They didn't lead for a single second in the game, and I do think that the crowd, the Tennessee fans in the arena, played a part in that. You know, when Tennessee would be really getting rolling, man, the people in attendance, they backed them, they were loud, they made their presence felt. A lot of the Tennessee fans were right there next to us in the media section, so we were especially hearing them all night long, heckling other South Carolina fans, cheering for their players and their team. So it was a good environment, and you know, Tennessee fans showed up well.
Rick Butler, Mr. Fabulous, joining us this afternoon on the program. And Rick, did you feel like when South Carolina cut it to three, it's interesting, you know, Tennessee has a 10-point lead at the under four timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, I remember thinking, I don't know if South Carolina can score 10 down the stretch here, but they get a three from Mack, and it's a 7-point game, and they're going back and forth. And eventually they got it down to a one possession game. It's a 3-point game with a little over a minute to play. Did you think that Tennessee was going to blow it?
No, I did not. And I felt like this for two reasons. I felt like, number one, Tennessee was doing well at the charity stripe for the most part throughout the game, and they were going to be putting their guys with the ball. Josiah Jordan James, Santiago Vesqui, who is Zakai Ziegler, whoever it would have been. I felt good about what Tennessee would be able to do from the free throw line. But at the same time, man, I just felt like this was Tennessee's game to win, and it felt like that through multiple parts of the game. I look at this Tennessee team just – from everything we know so far this season, from what we've watched in-game, from a lot of the practices that we've gotten to see behind the scenes, this is a Tennessee team that I think can put their foot in the ground and say, we're not losing this game. And I know that that's sort of a cliche thing to say, but there's not a lot of teams who can say that and actually mean it. I think that yesterday in South Carolina, in Columbia, South Carolina, with 1 minute left on the clock, Tennessee was able to say, we're not going to lose this game no matter what it takes. They were able to go. They handled their business from the charity stripe. Give South Carolina credit as well. I don't necessarily look at that as a collapse from Tennessee. South Carolina came up. They hit some shots. They used the energy of the fans and the crowd to help them. But I really think that Tennessee just said, we're not losing this game. There's no way that's going to happen. And eventually it was enough to pull through and get the victory.
Rick, do you feel like the Vols will be able to refocus after the emotions of last night with Kentucky coming in, a team that Tennessee – as I put it last segment, punked on their home floor last month in Rupp Arena. Do you think that Tennessee will be able to get back up one more time? The championship has already been clinched, but I guess the one seed still lingers out there.
Yeah, I don't foresee a hangover coming this Saturday afternoon inside Thompson Bowling Arena. For two reasons. Number one, you have the seniors on the team. The seniors on this team, they do not want to lose a single game for the rest of their Tennessee career. I also think they completely understand that this is their last game inside that coveted building that they've called home for the last 5 years or so. And that's not just Josiah and Santi, but that's the other guys, too, who have been there for a little bit less. I think that everybody knows what's at stake here. But then, hey, maybe more important than that, Tennessee has Rick Barnes. And I know that there's certainly been some conversation around him. I'm sure that conversation, especially the negative side of that, has died down on your radio waves over the last couple months or so. But I think that Rick Barnes is as locked in as I have seen him here at Tennessee. I think he completely understands what to do with this team. He understands the strengths and the weaknesses of them. But he also understands that there's a lot more ahead to be played for. It's one of the things that he said when he addressed the team afterwards in the locker room. I'm sure you guys saw the same video as well. So I just think there's a lot of leadership from this Tennessee team. Look, as the great Dusty Rhodes once said, if you're just watching and if you're following online, the view is never going to change. Tennessee has leaders on this team that can get them to where they want to go, to get them to new places that they haven't been before. So I look at both Rick Barnes and Tennessee's seniors as the reason why I don't expect a hangover. Now, I'm not guaranteeing a Tennessee win or anything like that, but I absolutely do not expect any sort of hangover, any sort of, you know, lackadaisical game, nothing like that. There's a lot more to play for this team, and I think they'll be ready for it.
Barnes does seem to be in the zone right now. Can your coach get in the zone? Rick, what do you think? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I mean, Konzo was in the zone. Remember?
That's a different kind of zone.
He put us all in it with him.
No. I'm saying, seriously, his last year there, he finally comes out of his shell. He's screaming on the sideline, we're going to the Sweet 16, and it was like, yes, this is what we've been wanting from you. Yeah. It's just a little bit of emotion over there on the sideline. And I feel like that he found a zone, and because I hear what you're saying. Yes, it feels like Rick Barnes is kind of – I don't want to say there's a comfort and a relaxation there that we haven't really seen.
He's just been it seems to me, Rick, like he's been pulling since – and we were all so worried about this four-game stretch, and rightfully so. But he's just pulled all the right levers, all the right buttons at the right time. It's been a masterclass.
Yeah. I absolutely think so, too. I think your coach has to be locked in. You know, Tennessee's not a team like, you know, I'll say maybe a Kentucky, certainly this year and certainly at other times in the past, where their head coach is one who say, you know, hey, go out there and just play basketball, right? Hey, go see who out can score. That's not what Tennessee does. Tennessee is a systematic, scheduled team that does things with purpose and intentionality. I think that Rick Barnes has been making the right moves lately. I think even from the practice court to the game court, man, he's locked into the details of what they need to do. On Tuesday when we were sitting there watching Tennessee basketball practice, Rick Barnes was talking about, you know, hey, what is going to be called a foul and how it's not going to be called a foul. That exact detail that Rick Barnes was telling his team impacted the exact way that Dalton Knecht made that four-point play. That play from the corner is exactly what Rick Barnes was showing the team on practice on Tuesday. So that's just one of the examples to me that shows how locked in he is with the details. But then you can also talk about the in-game coaching. I thought taking that time out when South Carolina cut it to about 6 points was a brilliant move. Sometimes in the past, I think Rick Barnes would, you know, maybe let his players go a little bit more, maybe let the opposing team sort of capture that run a little bit more. But I thought it was a great timeout that he called yesterday. It was able to reset the team and go forward. So I think your coach has to be locked in. I think that Rick Barnes is as locked in and as motivated as ever.
We've got Rick Butler from RTI on the show. We'll have Rick Barnes on the morning show right here on Fan Run Radio tomorrow with John and Bob. Be sure to tune into that. We will have Justin Gainey on with us tomorrow, Tennessee Associate Head Coach, as we do our thing live from Volunteer Auto Group on Callahan Drive in North Knoxville. And, Rick, do you think that the weight of past frustrations with Rick Barnes individually and with the Tennessee basketball program historically, do you think that weighs on this coach and these players, knowing that there is some pressure and some expectation of, listen, man, if anything then less than an Elite Eight, and for some, a Final Four, is going to be viewed as a disappointment this season?
You know, Russell, I think that's a great question. I don't know how much this team is impacted by the happenings and by what's being talked about around the fan base. I think they care and they want people to be on their side. But I think to your point right there, I think just from an internal perspective, they know that they have unfinished business with this senior class. They know they left unfinished business on the table during the NCAA tournament last year. You can talk about a guy like Zakai Ziegler not even being able to participate in that NCAA tournament. You talk about Dalton Knecht wanting to really kind of solidify his name in the college basketball world in his final year in the sport. I think that there's just so much motivation internally from this Tennessee basketball team right now that they're locked in and ready to go. I think you can talk about it from the seniors down. Again, I just keep coming back to the phrase, unfinished business on the table. So whether it be from something that either the media is saying or the fan base is saying, no matter what it might be, I think this team is looking internally right now and saying, hey, we believe that we can continue to go forward. We believe that we have the right pieces after all this time, and we want to make our mark on not just Tennessee, but the college basketball world as a whole before some of our seniors and some of this, some of these veterans and these upperclassmen sort of head out the door in the coming years. So I think there's a lot of motivation on the table. I think that they look at internally and they're ready to go with what they have.
Well, Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We're skipping over really two steps. I mean, we've got this game against Kentucky. It's weird. It feels like the conference season is done, and this is almost some sort of exhibition, although that's a bad word for it because it means so much more than an exhibition ever could. And then you've got the SEC tournament next week in Nashville, so plenty of opportunities for success before we even get to the NCAA tournament for this team.
Yeah, I was noticing, Rick, we could conceivably play Kentucky twice in 7 days.
Yeah, and when you're talking about a team that can put the ball in the basket as well as Kentucky can as of late, man, that's a dangerous thought. So I think that Tennessee is in a good place going forward. I think they're highly motivated and they're ready to go. But you're right, there's still things on the table here coming up next week in Nashville that this team is ready for, that they're going to be wanting to go ahead and grab. But there's a lot of stout competition out there. And you look at it sort of the way that I looked at yesterday's game was, you know, Tennessee obviously wanted a little bit of revenge, South Carolina being the only team to walk into their house and take a victory so far this season. Tennessee was able to go do the same. Well, now you're going to have your Kentuckys of the world, your Alabamas, your Auburns. If Tennessee matches up with them in the SEC tournament, well, they're going to be feeling sort of similar things. They're going to say, hey, we want our revenge on this Tennessee team. We weren't able to grab the SEC title because of that. Now's the time to make our mark. So I think this is a Tennessee team that's going to have a target on their back throughout the SEC tournament, but I think that they got the right guys in charge to be able to lead them the right way.
All right, Rick, stellar appearance by you as always. Before we let you run, one more thing we need to address with you. It is time to play a game, Rick Butler.
Yes.
A little game we like to call Will It Suck?
Yes.
It's time for
Will It Suck?
It's time for
Will It Suck?
It's time for
Will It Suck? Suck.
Suck. All right, you know the rules, boys. Jake Paul will fight Mike Tyson. I'm not making this up. YouTuber Jake Paul will fight former world heavyweight champion Mike Tyson in a boxing match July 20th at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas on Netflix. Just a lot going on there, I know.
Yeah.
Rick Butler, will it suck?
The fight itself will suck. The fact that none of us have to pay money if we already have a Netflix subscription, that part does not suck by any means. I will watch this fight for free, but I have no high expectations for it.
I had the same reaction. I saw this. It, you can't take your eyes away, right? You see it, and you're like, wow, that feels so big. And then you think
at Jerry's World,
this is an exhibition. This does mean nothing. A 58-year-old America's favorite convicted rapist.
Yes.
Going up against a guy who's never really been in
prize fighting. He's never been in a ring with somebody like this.
He's fought Nate Diaz, Anderson Silva, Tyron Woodley. These were MMA guys. Good punchers.
They aren't one of the greatest fighters that ever. And I'll go ahead. I don't think it's going to suck. You know why? Because I am finally this guy, even though Iron Mike is 58 and he's got some snow on the mountain, he's gone a little pretty much all gray. He looks incredible.
Chris, will it suck?
Probably, but I'm definitely going to watch it.
And you know why we're going to watch it, Houston? Because there's a chance when you get in the ring with Mike Tyson, he may land that one.
I agree with you 100%. I'll also say this. Jake Paul, not a bad boxer.
No,
not a bad boxer.
And he's got a 40-year difference in the age gap.
Even at 58 years old.
I want him to destroy Jake Paul. I'm so done with this charade. But it does have a little bit of like Rocky versus Thunderlips vibe.
But wow, that's a great reference. A mountain of molten lust. He's still capable with one punch of altering your life.
Or ending it, frankly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this guy's bigger. I think he's going to be able to take the punch.
I mean, you say that. We haven't seen him in a real fight. I don't count whatever they had with Roy Jones Jr. In the old folks' home. We haven't seen him in a real prize fight in 20 years. 2005.
The key for Paul would be to survive the first round, obviously.
Tucker?
Oh, it's going to suck.
What the hell? 4-1?
I really don't watch boxing all the time or just
You're not alone.
Don't
worry about it.
But see, the one time I did watch one of these celebrity matches, it was a snooze fest.
Rick, let me ask you this.
Sure.
If we go back and let's say Tyson just pummels this guy in like the first 45 seconds like he did Spinks back in the day, will it suck then? Will it have sucked if we get to watch Mike Tyson pound this guy in the hamburger?
Yeah, I mean, I guess not. If you get to see a flurry of punches, people always like seeing that. But, you know, I don't know. I'm here for a competitive fight, not a one-sided beatdown. I don't think it'll be like that, though. I think that Jake Paul is too young and too mobile to just get hit with a flurry like that. So I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I guess that would help a little bit if it was just a one-sided demolition derby.
I feel like if Jake Paul gets knocked out, it won't suck.
As I am a big boxing fan.
Sweet science.
I hate seeing old guys get in the ring, generally speaking. It feels like Tyson, you see him, he's doing his podcast and everything. It feels like he is much more lucid than some of these guys. Like when I hear Roy Jones getting in the ring, I cringe because he's it definitely, I think, shows when you listen to him commentate fights, which is painful at times. And we all remember Ali and some of the others that have obviously the sport has taken its toll on there. So I don't know, man. I hope it is exciting. I hope it doesn't go long. It's unclear what the sanctions of this bout will be. They haven't said how long it's going to be, how many rounds and all that stuff, but we'll see. I'll tell you what doesn't suck is Rick Butler's appearance on The Drive today. Well done, sir. I'm glad you enjoyed the voluntary reaction, you and Chump, on the way home, and I guess we'll see you Saturday at the arena. Big Game Russ going to be there in the flesh. We should get together.
Hey, if Big Game Russ is there, then I want a picture or a meeting or maybe even an autograph or something. But, hey, great talking to you guys today. Thank you for providing a little bit of entertainment on the way home. Russell, I thoroughly caught and enjoyed your Will It Suck reference when Cody Mack joined the line. So that was good. It did not go unnoticed. But, man, it's always fun to talk to you guys, and I'm sure we'll hopefully do it a couple times more over the next month.
Hey, Rick, we're getting ready to move studios.
I've heard.
You got to come down time, man. We got to have a farewell show.
Here. Yeah, we've been knocking it around. Maybe you, the Duke, Chancellor.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's make it happen next week before the SEC tournament. I guess I'll head down there on Friday or so. So let's make it happen sometime next week. Why not?
Our people get with your people.
Rick Butler, Rocky Top Insider, making his presence felt this afternoon. We got to take a quick timeout, 865-546-8200, your number if you want to get in on the action this afternoon. 546-8200, SEC Championes, 2023-2024. Rick Barnes has done it. We'll hear more from him when we continue. Stay tuned. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Fan Run Radio, The Drive, Russ LeBaire back with you, Houston Kresh, young Tucker Harlan, all hanging out here in the old White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Rick Butler, Rocky Top Insider Bear, what did you learn?
He is really, he's come, just thinking about when he first started with us, and he wouldn't talk a whole lot. When he first started?
He was a little shy, but. You crack the shell there. You can't get the little feller to shut up.
Whoa!
That's why I like him, man. He's a good guest.
Kid's
talkative.
Great. The thing that interested me the most was talking about, you know, where Barnes is at. Millie, because like right now we know, I feel like we can say with some certainty, Kinect's obviously been in the zone for most of this season. Zakai, I think once he got back out on the court and started trusting his knee not to buckle on.
Yeah, once he got his confidence
over
back.
Yep. The mental, you know, that mental hurdle that you have to get over if you've had that kind of an injury. And then Adu. You realize Jonas Adu and Kinect accounted for 2/3 of our points last night?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't score a whole lot. 66 is a low output for this team. And the scenario we discussed yesterday, the KenPom scenario of falling out of the top 20 in offensive efficiency, that did happen. I think
we play Kentucky on Saturday. That's what we're all thinking.
We can bounce right back in with a competent offensive showing on Saturday. But I mean, South Carolina, man, like I don't know how they do it, but those teams like them, Virginia is like that, Wisconsin, that can just pull
Houston.
You into their trap.
Yep.
Exactly. That just
they'll run on offense. They run out. They're going to take 30 seconds. They're going to run it all the way down, and then on defense, like
they make
I
you work.
Yeah, like they were really they were definitely affecting Jonas. and Kinect. I mean, Kinect's had to work his rear end off to get open. I don't know what it is that Barnes does on these inbound plays that he has. How can you just let him go to where he wants to go?
It's interesting. They have been, and maybe it's just having Kinect, but I don't feel like that has been a strength through Barnes' tenure here. He's you know, we all remember Bowden's throwing it down out of bounds against Vandy, and he's done good at having those alley-oop plays and stuff, but I don't feel like he's been bad. I feel like he's been maybe a little bit above average. He's no Bruce Pearl, I guess is what I'm trying to like. Yeah. Pearl was just so good at that.
Tindall was actually really good at that too.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, Barnes is having one of those kinds of seasons where he is on that Pearl level of, man, everybody in the building, the millions of people watching around the world, no, it's going to number three and wide open for three-point attempts, coming down the lane for a dunk. I mean, it's really impressive.
I do think a lot of it's Kinect. His explosion his cuts, the way he gets to full height before he shoots, even if a guy's there, he's able to shoot it.
It's not just Dalton.
Everybody's working for him.
But he's making the shots.
But once he gets the ball, he's able to do so much more. So you have to worry about the lob from him. You have to then worry about the corner three. It's not Vescovi just running around, oh, he's going to get a three. You got to guard the three-point line. Dalton can soar through the air and throw it down or be 5 feet behind the line and drain the three.
Jonas threw an incredible shoulder into that guy.
I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that we are not going to get Kinect wide open at the rim three times on inbounds plays like we did in Rupp Arena on Saturday.
I know they still don't play defense.
I know that I'm just going to assume that Calipari is going to make that a point of emphasis next 2 days.
It may not be Kinect, but it may be somebody else that gets open.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's kind of what Houston says is when you're paying so much attention to Kinect, all of a sudden you leave the pick man and there's Adu at the rim.
Yep. And this is the time of year where you've worked on your stuff all season long. And the really good coaches they have the back page of the blobs, as they call them, baseline out of bounds plays. And then it's the, hey, you know how we do this for Dalton? Mm-hmm. Well, here's what they're going to do now, and this is what you're going to do. You're going to slip, and you're going to get the dunk. Or, hey, Vescovi, you're going to drop down into the corner, and you're going to hit the three now because they're going to be so focused on Kinect.
It's the, we know that you know, and you know that we know that you know, and we know that you know that we know that you know.
It's how many spinoffs can you have on it? And right now, the way we're running the action, there's a lot of stuff that they could throw in there.
Triple J's another one who's had some monster dunks off some lobs this year.
Boy,
I wish he'd have thrown that one down last night.
Man, it was so close.
It was the Iwaka one is the one.
They were both potentially game-changing dunks. Sometimes 2 points is more than 2 points, and those both were potential daggers, but South Carolina, they make it hard. They make it hard on you. 865-546-8200, your number to get on the show this afternoon. 546-8200 if you want to chime in on this beautiful Thursday afternoon in East Tennessee. Tennessee baseball is just kind of flew under the radar. I saw a couple of updates, but it was not something that I could pay any amount of attention to. I'm sorry, Tony. We still love you. But we just had other things going on last night.
I'm kind of wondering if Tony – did you guys see that Tony popped up and Zakai's mentioned?
I did see that. That was cool.
He wants a hat.
Yeah. I'm sure he'll get one. I went back and watched the Wheels highlight package on YouTube today. Man, that was close shave against the Screaming Eagles of Southern Indiana yesterday.
Pitcher's duel.
Seacrest had a
10 strikeouts.
Career? Mm-hmm.
Well, we talked about yesterday wanting to see him go into the fifth inning, throw 70 or 80 pitches, and that's exactly what we saw. I think he did 5 2/3. Probably could have done 6, it looked like, from what I saw. 10 strikeouts, up near 80 pitches. Not the greatest competition, but that's got to be a huge bolt of confidence for him going into conference play.
Definitely. And then, you know, Kirby had a nice night out of the pen, too. So,
And
for Xander, it definitely gave him a chance to really get his arm limbered up and I mean, he hadn't pitched that. What's the longest he's pitched this year?
That's the longest he's pitched in his career.
That easily the longest he's pitched in his career.
Most pitches.
Yeah, so, I mean, good for him. And now we got Illinois coming in for three this weekend, starting tomorrow at 6. And a week from tomorrow, we will go down to Tuscaloosa. Feels like we were just there.
I love that everybody hates us right now.
In everything. In everything.
Yeah.
It's great.
Chris, he got the torches lit last night. Poor Andrew Perloff.
Sorry, McLovin.
Don't you know that guy?
No.
No.
I thought you had something where you worked with him or for him or beside him. I thought you had your paths had crossed. So you just killed that guy. You know he's part of the Fox family. Are you allowed to do that?
No, he's not anymore.
He's not?
No, he's CBS.
Yeah, he does his own thing.
He's the enemy.
Screw him then.
He was
loving.
He was with
the
DP, then he left.
He should have stayed with DP.
That's what I said.
He's not an H here.
Damn, that's a lot meaner than anything Russell said or Houston said.
No, he had a very nice role carved out on a very good show, and he was good on it. They knew when to throw it to him. It was just a good role, and now he's just floating around out there.
Fran Fraschilla, friend of the show now.
Did you read that thread where he was responding to the people who were trolling and talking about, you know, regular season Rick and Texas and all that? The responses were better than the original post.
Yeah, I mean, he's just that's not somebody you want to get in a battle of wits with. I mean, he can shut down.
Well, as much as anything can be shut down on the internet, but yeah, the internets were mad at Tennessee.
He just dropped that in there. I don't know if I'd forgotten about it or just never knew it, that deal with the writer from Texas asking him, you know, coach, are you going to coach again? And according to Fraschilla, Barnes said, yeah, sooner than you think. And the next day he got introduced here.
Yeah, I remember that because he basically – somebody had written about this lately, but he basically went straight from that press conference to Knoxville and Hart – spent the night at Hart's house and – the one decent thing Dave Hart did for the University of Tennessee, bringing Richard Dale Barnes to town.
I have a level of expertise, and I have a level of information that nobody else has.
He gave us that sound clip, which is just absolutely elite.
Gold, Jerry.
Even after all these years, 10-plus years later.
Do you feel like we ought to formally thank the University of Texas, you know, as they're joining the SEC for...
Gratitude is important in life, man.
Thank you for giving us your first ballot Hall of Fame basketball coach.
I thank Texas. I thank Dave Hart. I thank John Curry for bringing us Tony Vitello.
Even these terrible people, you know, they get one right every now and then.
They're terrible. Yeah, they're just bad at their jobs and
broken clocks right twice a day.
Yeah, terrible people was a little strong.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Stay with us. Hour number two of The Drive coming up. Tucker's got your top four at four when we continue right here on Fan Run Radio.